This is Cheryl Murkowski, and I emphasize my emphysema with Mikey Pod on the Bayou.
Why, thank you, Cheryl. Yes, this is Mikey Pod on the Bayou. This is episode 32, January 12th, and here's a Houston artist, Lanky, with Falling Hard for the Girl. That was Lanky from Houston with Falling Hard for the Girl. That was from his album Odd Hour Work Week. I saw him at Brazil maybe a year ago. Brazil is a coffee shop here in Houston. Brandon and I walked down there, and he was there playing. It was just him and his guitar singing, playing, singing. And so it was great. And so I finally remembered to track him down. I saw a post somewhere on some blog. And it reminded me how much I liked him. So that is his single. And I love it. Do you? Let me know. this is Michael Herron, Mikey Pod on the Bayou. Today is January 13th, et cetera, et cetera. And today's episode, I have an interview with my friend J.W. Richard from Mandrake Society Radio in Dallas. We kind of did a dual interview thing, and he's going to be on my show, and I'm going to be on his. I think his is going to come out tomorrow. And it's late tonight, the 12th, so you might not even hear this till tomorrow, too. So if you don't already listen to his show, he's at Mandrake Society. Oh, God. MandrakeSocietyRadio.com, I believe. Oh, shit. I'll put it in the show notes. I should have written that down. So I've got that interview with him. Last week's episode, I still just loved. I hope you guys liked it as much as I did, because I listened to it several times because it was just so much fun. So I'm going to try to do more interviews like that where people actually come over here. I think that Lanky said that he would be willing to be interviewed too, so maybe he'll be my next in-house artist interview. And maybe, just maybe, he'll bring his guitar and I can do a crappy in-home recording of him doing a song for us. So that is that. Let's go into the interview. I'll go ahead and here's JW. I had a great time talking to him. And I pared this down from about 35 minutes. Can you believe I'm still coughing? I am. Yeah. So here's JW and myself discussing racism, or race relations, I guess you could say. And here we go.
Okay, I'm on the phone with J.W. Richard from Mandrake Society Radio. Hello, J.W.
Hello.
So ever since back when I was doing the Francis Newton stuff, yes, I've had this this kind of sense about, just been thinking about racism and about how a lot of times it seems that political correctness really just kind of glosses over people's racism, and we don't ever wind up healing anything. So I guess that's what I want to talk about today.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
okay.
It's so funny. And I do that little nervous giggle because I don't really know how to express this kind of stuff. So, which is part of why I wanted to open up the dialogue, and hopefully maybe other people will hear this and they'll begin this dialogue too.
Well, let me then kind of spin it on you since you're opening it up. I'll kind of take a spin at something. What interested you specifically in the Francis Newton case? Was it the death penalty? Was it the fact that it was a woman dying, a black woman dying? What really got you interested in the case at all?
Well, that's a really good question. I first heard about it when I signed up for the mailing list of the Houston Independent Media Center. Mm-hmm. And that was really the first death penalty thing that came through there. So I think part of the fact that she was a woman had to do with it. But just in general, I've always been opposed to the death penalty. So I got the started reading about it, and it became clear that if nothing else, she didn't receive a fair trial. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what drew me to it.
Oh, well, you know, I'll be honest. I really... I'll say it like this. I really did not, or was not aware, as far as on my radar, who else, because there are certain things that just made news.
Right.
The Francis Newton case made news because of the outcry of her death, and also the botched thing that was going on. So, you know, that was one thing that was kind of wild. I think there were some people going like, okay, this is not quite right. Same thing with Tookie Williams, and I think with Tookie Williams, people were going, okay, well, he's a redeemed man, and then the whole thing of what about redemption, and that was kind of strange. I mean, it really was kind of strange to go through that type of deal, because it was, I don't know, just the whole thing of like, okay, now I'm a redeemed man, now I've turned my life around, so you shouldn't kill me. And I don't even want to get started, but it's just, I don't know. It's weird. As you can tell, I kind of come from a slightly different place with the death penalty. And it isn't that I agree with it, but there are, I don't know. It's not cut and dry for me.
Yeah.
It's not a cut and dry thing of like, okay, this should just simply not be. Now, of course, some people may say, well, what if it happened to you or something like that? I'm like, well, yeah, you know, yeah, of course, if something happened to me or something happened to that person, sure, they want to change it. But again, that's a totally different situation.
Yeah. Interesting.
So,
yeah, I guess I never really knew where you stood with all that stuff.
Well, I mean, I agree. I supported what you did. Really, in the sense that you got to, I mean, the podcast that really meant a lot to me was when you interviewed Francis Newton's mother.
Right.
There was something about that. There was something about the closeness and the humanity of listening to her mother and where her mother stood that made it a really good podcast. Outside of really the whole thing of whether I agreed or disagreed with the death penalty, or whether I agreed or disagreed with the fact that, or as far as anything about the case or botched facts or things like that. So I enjoyed the podcast just because you really got to the heart of touching someone that the mainstream news would never cover, which I always thought was the magic of podcasting. Touching those things that ordinary news, you know, may not touch or may not be able to get as close to. And you did with that show. So that was one thing I really appreciated as far as the entire Frances Newton. And I guess afterwards I was, taken aback, maybe, taken aback sounds weird. But anyway, the following podcast, when unfortunately she was executed, just this deep stirring, like it really, you really felt that. It was not just, you know, we tried, it didn't work, you know, and I guess that was another part that was in and outside of the event, good of podcasting, because I got a chance to know you.
Yeah.
And what moved you and what stirred you. So, I mean, it's always great to listen to a podcast and actually hear something from the person who's podcasting and go like, this I believe, and it may not come forth in that quite a that same thing, but it's, you can definitely tell, okay, this has truly moved this person.
Wow, that's interesting. That so I think that part of what made it affect me so much, and it surprised me how much it affected me, because I was walking I was listening to the radio to KPFT the day that, you know, she was going to be executed, and I had just finished teaching my last lesson, and I was headed home. I was listening to the radio to decide whether or not to go to this protest, because in my mind I still thought that there was a chance that she would, you know, get a pardon or and then when I heard on the radio that she wasn't and they were going to go ahead and do it, I made it to this church that's right, it's pretty close to me, where they were having a well, I talked about all that on the podcast. But as I was walking out of my car over there, that's when I realized, oh my God, I feel like I'm going to cry. When it, because it was, I think a lot of it was just the fact that I met her mom and talked to her mom so closely that it,
yeah,
it makes it become, I mean, it suddenly becomes like, this is for real. And it's not just like this person who's being punished by being executed. It's everyone that knows her. And
exactly. And again, when you're talking to a mother, regardless of what has gone down with her child, when you touch on the mother's love for that child, even if the case wasn't botched and we knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that someone was guilty, you still feel that, because that's a mother for her child. You're gonna feel that. That's, there's no way you can escape that.
Yeah.
And that's not even a racial thing right there. That's just real, you know. So I definitely can sense and understand why the emotion would hit you, because of, again, you're thinking about, this is, I just talked to this woman whose child has just been killed. I mean, you felt that. It's like you felt that grief instantaneously.
Yeah.
So yeah, I totally understand that. You know,
back to sort of the events leading up to that, the first meeting that I went to for the committee to free Frances Newton was at the Shape Center, which is in a mostly black neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And the entire, I walked in the place and there were like, it was after school stuff going on, and it was a bunch of young black kids and their parents, and like I was definitely the white guy, and I was having this after the fact, especially I was thinking about sort of how I carried myself and how, like, what was going on in my head while I was there, and I realized there was so much going on in my mind about like trying to like let these people know that I'm cool. And I don't know really how to express that in the way that it really goes on in my mind, but it struck me later that it all, like, all that was based on assumptions I was making about who all these people were.
Sure.
So but then it becomes, you know, and that to me comes from this sort of like, I don't know how to really phrase it. I have a friend, I always talk about my friend who's like this, and it's one of those things that I realize that I do because I'm the same way, where she tries so hard to be PC, you know, politically correct, that it becomes racism.
You know, unfortunately, I have a good friend who's actually Hispanic from Houston, and and it's not unfortunate that I have that friend, that sounded really stupid, but what's unfortunate is that this phrase PC he's termed, and I think it's really funny based on what you just said, he's termed politically Caucasian.
And I can totally see where that would come from.
And I what's funny about that is that to me, you know, we all know about our racial history in this country, and especially in Texas and different things like that. And it's funny to me, I'll ask this question actually before I even go any further. Had you ever been prior to that in any environment where you, as a either ethnic person or just a person of color, were not in the majority? Have you ever been in a place like that? And or shall I say like this, have you ever noticed that you were ever in a place? Because obviously in this place, you noticed that you are not in the majority here. It's like, okay, I am in a place that is foreign.
Yeah.
Have you ever been in a place like that?
Not entirely. Like there was, I had a, this sounds awesome. I had this black friend when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I would hang out with her, but it was always at school. And like, and it was in East Texas, and it was very much, our school was, I mean, not officially segregated, but like at, after school and people were waiting for buses and stuff, like there was definitely a black part of town. So a lot of times I would kind of be hanging out with her over there, but that doesn't really count. I mean, I had the same sort of sense, but I was still at the school in which I was the majority.
Yeah.
So yeah. In that way, like that was one of the only times, I mean, the only time I can remember right now that I was like clearly in the minority, like by a mile.
And see, what's interesting about that is that I guess in my life, there are times when I have known that I am the only black person in this room, the only African-American person in this room. And it's just almost been nothing but a thing for me, because I just know that's just the way it's going to be in certain situations. Not that I always wish it to be that way, but it just is. You know, it is what it is. And yet I find it funny when I talk to other friends who happen to be white or Caucasian, and they're almost sort of like, whoa, I'm really not in the majority here. That's just kind of a funny thing to me, and you know, not so much funny, haha, you know, stupid on you, but it's more like that's very interesting that you get that just big sense of that, when for me it's been the flip, and it's just, if anything, I don't know, it's just funny to me. It's funny to me.
But for me to be like sort of communicating that in that way of like, oh my God, and can you believe that I was in the minority? You know what I mean? It's, yeah.
And you play, and I guess what's so funny is that you play music too, so I'm surprised you've never been in any musical situations where there have been more ethnic groups there besides just white, even though white really isn't an ethnic group. That's really more, yeah, way. I digress. So you've not been in a place where you're at least you've noticed that you were the kind of the lone white boy in the group.
Yeah, but that's exactly the part of it. I mean, the part that's funny about that is what really I feel like needs to be somehow more easily discussed among people, you know, that for me to even mention that, if like my first thought of like, oh, don't say that. That's like, that's not okay to like even acknowledge that people are different races. You know what I mean? It gets.
See, I disagree with that. I think you should acknowledge, you know, people say, you know, they'll come up and they're trying to be cool, say, man, I'm colorblind, I don't see color. That's bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying.
That's bullshit. I mean, I'm just like going, you should see color, because I think color is beautiful. I think color is a wonderful thing. And what's unfortunate is that we take color and put a cast on it that says that you are less than so-and-so. That's when we make it unfortunate. But color is a beautiful thing. And so if, you know,
oh, man. No, go with it.
Okay, you know, there's a clip, and this has happened in several other instances, but I'll just mention this clip. There's a clip from the film Brothers of Brother, which was a film done, I think, 2004, 2005, that was dealing with, it was a somewhat of a fictional account on a true character. It's a fictional account on someone that's true. And this is Bruce Richard Nugent, and I think I may have just totally reversed the order, but Richard Bruce Nugent, who's a part of the Harlem Renaissance. And so it was about this character meeting a young man and kind of giving him some hope as a young black gay man. And this film is on DVD, but it also is available. It was shown on PBS when I saw it. But anyway, there's a scene where this young black man, and unfortunately I don't remember the young actor's name, is falls for this younger white guy. And they have sex, and, you know, the white guy says something to the effect of, you know, your hands are so dark, and, you know, your butt is just so, I've just never seen anything like that, you know, so dark. And what's interesting is that the black guy felt insulted. He felt insulted because he felt like, okay, you're just looking at me as just some object that's all cute to hold, but you're not really seeing me for what I am. A part of me kind of took issue with that, because I was like, going, well, come on. I mean, we all have a little bit of curiosity if we're honest with ourselves. I mean, there's a little bit, I mean, maybe not be sexual curiosity to the fact that I just want to go to bed with you just to see what you look like naked. Oh, wow. God, look at those farmer's tans. Look at that. Look at those arms. You know, look how white you are. I mean, just if someone were to say, like, wow, I can't believe, you know, it's like come up to some guy who actually has a deep farmer's tan and go like, wow, you really are white up there. And this white guy going, hey, I'm a little whiter up here. You know, I mean, like, what? So, you know, I don't know. That's the whole thing there. And I think we all have an honest curiosity. But when it comes to relationships and sexual things, I think at the base of it, though, we also want to, you know, be with someone who sees us for more than that. And sees us, you know, it recognizes our experiences as a person and in our life. And sometimes that may mean someone who has to be of a certain ethnicity for some people. Sometimes it doesn't. It depends on the person.
Yeah. But doesn't a lot of that happen anyway? Like in, like, just that need to be loved unconditionally. You know, how much of that is specific to like what would you call it? A biracial, multiracial?
Yes. I mean, I think at the core, everyone wants to be loved unconditionally. I think there's just a lot of different things that will go into a relationship. Not only, you know, hey, do you understand my background? Do you understand where I come from? Would you understand if I do this and I do that? And I mean, I know this because I'm in an interracial relationship, so there's definitely been a lot of learning on my part, and not so much in so much as asking questions, as much as just sitting back and observing. Let me just observe this picture and see what's going on, and not say that this is a quote white thing or a quote black thing. This is your thing.
Right.
This is your background. This is where you come from. This is my background. This is where I come from. And you don't necessarily have to label it black with me. Just label it what it is. It's my history. I mean, have you? And I'll ask you straight up, Michael. Have you dated a black guy?
Have I dated a black guy?
Or have you? Yeah. Have you dated a black guy? And now I'll ask later. You know, I'll ask secondly if you've dated anyone that's of a different ethnicity. But I'll ask specifically if you dated a black guy.
Yes.
Okay.
Come on, like. Why? Yes, I have. And his skin was so, like, dark. I couldn't resist. I had to get there.
That's funny.
Is it time to wrap up this portion of the conversation?
That's up to you.
Well,
This is for you.
All right. Well, thank you for joining me on the show today, JW.
You're very welcome.
And everyone check out, it's mandrakesociety.com, is that right?
For the blog, yeah, it's mandrakesociety.com, but for the podcast, they're actually hosted at mandrakesocietyradio.com. And, you know, there's links for iTunes and all those fun things.
Perfect. I'll put links in my show notes and all that. Show notes is?
Yes.
Is that what I just said?
Show notes.
Show notes is.
Come on, dude. Come on, show.
All right, it's time to end this.
My show notes and things. Yeah, I'll do
and
that.
And stuff.
I do that, boy. You better know that. Shit.
See, that'll be so awesome. See, now I can start talking like this. Because it's aight. Because I got. Because my homeboy in. Smack. All right. Thanks for being on the show, JW.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Ray.
That rocks. I really had a good time doing that interview. Thanks again for being on the show, JW. You can check him out. Well, he just said the websites, and as you know, I don't remember. So great. Thanks for being on the show. And check out his show. I was really inspired by his show to really edit that interview, because if you've listened to his show before, if you go over there and listen to it now, you'll hear that it's very like well done and well produced. So I was really pleased to have you on the show. Also, any comments you have about that conversation we had, I would love to hear. In a lot of ways, when I was listening back to that interview, there are places that I felt like I was just being a dumbass. But, you know, like, it seems like part of what happened with me deciding to podcast was that I decided to also be, allow myself to, like, be stupid about stuff and start asking questions, which really isn't stupid at all now, is it? There are no stupid questions, just stupid asses. That's how I look at it anyway. I have a special dedication for JW. This is Midnight Star. I'll be a freakazoid. Come on and wind me up. I'll be a freakazoid. Come on and wind me up. Freakazoid. Oh, yeah. That's Freakazoid by Midnight Star. Especially played there for J.W. Richard. Bless you, my friend. Really, he and I wound up having some great phone conversations leading up to and after that recording. I just ate some peanuts. Sorry. Wow, it's really easy to like do the actual show after all this editing is done. Because that's pretty much what I've got. I do want to announce the winner to the Black Math Experiment CD. Autographed, and that would be Derek Etnier. I think I pronounced his name right. And damn it, I didn't write down where he's from. I think it's M-O, whatever that stands for, Mo. Hold on, let me look it up. I took the windscreen off this thing. Derek is from St. Louis, Missouri. I'm glad I don't teach geography. Oh, God, I didn't also give a shout-out to Mike Hipp. After the discussion, there was, if you are a member of QPotter or you go over there, you would know that there was some discussion there about a bunch of crap. But it keeps getting referred to as the drama. But even by my standards, which are kind of low for the drama lately, that didn't qualify as drama. But it reminded me that he hosted me at his site for free and put up a little, you know, a page and stuff at podcastsoup.net. Never asked for anything in return. So I decided to order a candle. He makes these soy candles and I got a, it's late. It's 10, it's 11:10 and I'm just loopy. But let me finish telling you about the candle, then I'll wrap up the show. It's a great candle. Okay. So, but it actually really is good. And he sent me an extra lemon verbena candle. And my, what I ordered was a, what's that cucumber? What's that one vegetable? It's a cucumber melon candle. And it's great. I have it in my office at school. And I was burning it today. Took me that long to find a match. So I think that's all I've got for you. No giveaway this week, but probably next week. There's one in the works, and actually, it's a fucking damn cool giveaway, if I say so myself. But I want to make sure that I have the stuff in my paws before I, you know, tell you people I'm going to give it to you. Uh-huh. So right now, I'm trying to find, I didn't set one thing up. My closing thing. Digging some peanuts out of my teeth. You're probably not listening now anymore anyway. MPOB, Mikey Pod Show Elements is what I'm looking for. So I can do the closing. And here it is. Thanks for listening, you guys. MikeyPod@gmail.com. MikeyPod.com is the website. You can call 206-339-6682. And seriously, I would love to hear your feedback about my conversation with JW. You can also go over there and where he interviews me. I think that show will be out tomorrow, he said. But you never know. And I think that's all I got for you.
You've been listening to Mikey Pod on the Bayou with Michael Herron. Mikey wants your input to the show. Do you have a comment about something that was said on the show? A review or a promotion of a cultural event, especially in the Houston area? Or you just want to say hi? Email is MikeyPod@gmail.com. The Mikey Pod Show hotline, 206-339-6682. And record it down for all to hear. See you next time right here for Mikey Pod on the Bayou. MikeyPod.com.